You're in a good place now. Relax. Breathe. Smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and entertainment, where relevant topics are discussed and where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, live on 660 The Answer.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we're talking about your thoughts. And what do your thoughts say about you? You know, a lot of times we don't really think about what's going on in our mind. We don't see or register how important our thoughts can be, because our thoughts become things. And when thoughts become things, we have to actually honestly look at our thoughts and see, maybe even police them to a degree. Good evening, Bill. How are you doing?
I am doing wonderful, Ashley. Great Saturday night.
A beautiful Saturday night it is. It is very warm, very warm.
Yes.
It's still hot.
Now, what's funny about that, Eric?
Smoking, man. Smoking.
Eric, how you doing?
Hold on 1 second. Let me check with my thoughts.
Oh, that'll take a while.
We'll wait till you get another message. Yeah. We'll wait till you get another message.
I am happy to be here.
Chris, how you doing?
Doing great tonight, Ashley.
You doing good?
Doing awesome.
Good to have you. Good to have you. So we're talking tonight about thoughts, about how thoughts are things. And a lot of people don't really realize that part of what we think. Because a lot of times we think, okay, our thoughts are just in our head. They're no big deal. I mean, sometimes you get a little scared because you wonder if some people can read your mind. I've ever been there where you're with somebody, especially like a wife or a girlfriend or whoever, in my case, a husband, you go, can they actually read my mind? I hope they can't hear what I'm thinking now. But other times we don't really think about what our thoughts do to us on a daily basis. So let's begin our discussion tonight on what do you think about on a daily basis? What do you think on a day-to-day thing, day-to-day life, Bill? Give me a synopsis of your thoughts. I'd like to do
that. Oh, boy. How long do I have here? And is this a family show?
Buckle up. Buckle up.
That's talk about
buckle up, buttercup. Let's go.
I don't even know where to start,
hot
actually.
Hot seat. Okay. Think about this. You wake up in the morning.
Right.
You wake up in the morning. Where do your thoughts usually lead?
Okay. First thought is I got to go to the bathroom.
Okay, so we've gone to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's and I'm sorry, but as I've gotten a little bit older, that becomes more important.
Are we talking about the prostate today? Or
we can. You know,
let me step away from the show if we're talking prostate.
It's more like the bladder, actually, in this case. But
the bladder. So you go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You leave the bathroom. What are your first thoughts? Like, how the day's going to be, right?
Isn't that the things
we think about?
My thoughts are, okay, you know, I've got to get organized here. So at such and such time, I got to do this, or I got to be in a certain place. Then later on in the morning or later on the day, I've got to get this accomplished. And by the end of the day, such and such needs to be accomplished.
And then there's a lot of people that, you know, they start their day and they have their coffee after they've gone to the restroom.
Yeah.
And they take a shower, they get ready, and they're thinking, okay, God. Especially if it's a Monday. Oh, God, here we go. Oh, it's always been a bad Monday for me. Oh, Jesus. You know what I mean? All I need is another day like this.
Yeah. And for me, you know, when you get to be my age and having kids, your thoughts are trying to remember the thoughts that you had to spark the thoughts that you're currently having.
You didn't write them down, did you?
You didn't write them down.
Well, there's several different layers of thought. So think about it. Okay, so Bill started talking about like the do one thing, then the other, right? He was very project-oriented, accomplishing-oriented, which to me is very almost sterile to the point of I have to go here and I go there. And there are a lot of people that think that way. That's a very positive, okay way of thinking, because you don't have all this like sidebar conversation.
Yeah.
But most people have the jury, the folks in there, they have the they got everybody up in their mind. And so they get up and they go to the bathroom and they get ready and they go, today's going to suck. Okay, and that's the first part, is how bad is the day going to be? Now, what about my coworkers? Okay, I got to deal with so-and-so, you know? Ah, jeez. You know, and so you have all this conversation, and so if you can kind of piecemeal your thoughts together and say, okay, this part of my thoughts is about judgment. this part of my thoughts is about precedent that's taken place in my past. So I'm going to assume that this day is going to be like this because yesterday was like this, or the last 6 months was like this, or every time I have to see Judy, this is what happens.
Yeah.
And every time I see Judy, it's a crap storm, and I got to deal with this stuff all the time. Yeah. She's never on the same page. We're never going to see eye to eye. And so you have all these kind of conversations in your head instead of just like Bill said, you get up, you think about what you got to do, and you do it. Because most people don't do that. You got all this other commentary going on.
You
got
to filter through.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I have to do that. I think Eric kind of hit upon it. It's like, you know, if I don't organize myself, because you know I have AD&D, right?
AD&D?
Or DD, what?
ADD.
Whatever.
ADD, baby. Attention deficit disorder.
ADD, baby.
Like I said, you know, perfect example.
Okay, Bill, but just a sidebar real quick. Bill has attention deficit, probably a little bit of hyper disorder as well. That's what I've diagnosed so far. We'll talk more about that. Go ahead, Bill.
I didn't know we were on the couch on this show.
I was going to say, I don't even talk about ADD. I don't even remember what we were talking about now. But yeah.
We need to write a list.
All kidding aside, I have to write lists, or I have to kind of put in my head, okay, you know, today is, you know, let's just choose a day, Tuesday. So I have to do this, and this today. So, you know, and I'm one of those people, I'm not a morning person at all. I take at least
no
two
way.
Hours.
Yeah, not
I,
you.
I take at least 2 hours to wake up, even after coffee.
I know when not to call, and I know if I leave a message, I know it's going to take a few hours to return.
Yeah, exactly. Because, so, you know, when I'm still in the process of waking up and showering, shaving, you know, getting dressed, eating breakfast, whatever, I have to kind of, you know, simplify things, you know, because I'm just not capable of really deep thoughts at that point.
Okay.
What did the first like humans, what were they thinking? You know, survival, you know, and it's kind of like that today. It's, you know, the human psyche is all about survival. It's all about doing the things and creating the environment that you need to survive.
Getting through the day.
Exactly. Whether it's that day dealing with Judy, the bad coworker, or dealing with the person in traffic.
Or the saber-toothed tiger.
But I think there's something about self-preservation that dominates thoughts. Think about that. Self-preservation dominates thoughts. And I don't know if we openly admit that once those thoughts become words, but the majority of our actions, which are generated by our thoughts, are about self-preservation. Think about that. And I didn't think about that until we start
exactly
talking about
but
that.
But you have to define self-preservation. So you have a lot of people that are self-preserving themselves from being judged. You have people self-preserving themselves from what people are going to think or what's going on in their life. And so self-preservation is at very many levels for some people. I mean, for you and I, that could mean we're running from the wild crazy person that's got five guns and, you know, they're shooting guns ablazing across the street. That to me might be self-preservation, but for some other people, it could be walking to work every day and dealing with coworkers that constantly seem to put them down or that they see are judgmental or pushing their buttons or what have you. And just to deal with them could feel like they're trying to preserve themselves on a daily basis.
Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of interesting. And that's what I love about the show, Ashley, is that the things that we talk about are all interconnected and interrelated. We were talking about another show talking about fatherhood and parenthood and giving. And I think as we evolve as human beings, I think those thoughts go from that self-preservation. And then as we evolve and mature and live on this earth a little bit longer, the thoughts then become, how can we positively impact other people? And that's a higher level of thought. It's not about self. It's about how self can impact other people. And that's a completely different dimension of thought. But I think that's part of the evolution.
I understand where you're going, and a lot of times that's pinnacle, but however, we have to begin with kind of getting rid of the crap that we have.
Got to clean house first.
You got to clean house, you know,
you
got to clean it up, and a lot of people don't even realize that they have this going, and that's something that we might want to talk about tonight, is that sometimes that broken record that we have doesn't even compute. A lot of times we make decisions based on these subconscious thoughts that we don't really think about.
Yep.
We make decisions based on, oh, I'm not good enough or whatever, so I'm just not going to go on a follow through, or I'm not going to go on a call them because they're not going to.
Well,
I
think you just hit on a big theme, Ashley, conscious versus subconscious thoughts.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
As far as subconscious goes, I mean, you can put yourself on automatic, so to speak.
Yeah.
And just kind of go through the day, and by the time the day is over, it's like, what just happened?
Right.
You know, I've actually experienced that myself. I've said on this show many times before, you know, before I got into this gig, you know, I was in my previous life as an insurance agent, and I didn't like what I was doing. A lot of days I was just on, you know, robot mode.
Self-preservation
and
survival.
Just out of self-preservation. Yeah, it's what I had to do to get through the day.
getting through the day, my gosh. I mean, that's another thought that I'm saying, too, is that a lot of times when we think we got to get through the day, I mean, how bad is that? I can barely get through the day. Think about those words. Think about what get through the day means. I mean, that sounds like you need like a raft or some sort of safety or some sort of SOS. You know, like you well, need some sort of Coast Guard.
I mean,
to
it's like
Erica's
saying,
you.
It's survival mode. And maybe too many people are in survival mode.
Survival from the insurance industry? I mean, like survival. Come on. I mean, you're not out there in Afghanistan getting shot down.
Maybe it's our primal self. Maybe it's that caveman in us, you know, trying to hide from the pterodactyl, you know.
The same two tigers.
Survival.
Yeah, maybe it's the maybe that's the reptilian brain still in us that's talking.
Y'all can have a reptilian brain. I don't. Okay. Straight up. That is uncanny. So yeah, I get what you're saying, but I think that's where we're going tonight is to talk about the things that we say to ourselves, the life we live. I mean, the last time I ran into a friend of mine, he said, I'm barely holding on. And you know what? If you're barely holding on, I'm surprised that you're able to be here tonight. So we'll talk more about that. We'll be talking about thoughts or things, the positive, the negative ones, and how thoughts can actually create outcomes. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim up bar. Glass of Perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess, and on tonight's show, we've been discussing thoughts. What do your thoughts say about you, and are these thoughts actually benefiting you? You know, thoughts are things, and in the last segment, we were talking about what do you think about on a daily basis. And you know, when you think about it, from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to sleep, even through your sleep, you have unconscious thoughts, what have you. But from the whole time that you're awake that day, you have certain thoughts. And a lot of people have like, okay, I have to do this, I have to do that, the laundry list thoughts, as well as the judgment thoughts. You have thoughts about what other people are thinking about you, or what you think you need to be done, or what needs to be done in your life, or what have you. But let's do a thought process on what are the positive and negative thoughts that we have. I think positive thoughts are very helpful because they, you know, obviously thoughts are things, but when we think positively, we think with a certain positive accent. When we're negative, it seems like everything in our day is negative. It's like almost when you listen to yourself and you're like, it can't get any worse. This day cannot get any worse. And what happens? The day gets worse. It gets worse because you're actually creating it to happen. You know, I have a friend the other day that said, I had this accident and I literally had to get, you know, the cops out there and they had to tow my car and I just knew the day couldn't get any worse. And it got a lot worse because it kept going on and on. I said, you have to stop yourself, check yourself, basically wipe that slate clean and start over. Otherwise, you might be in the grave.
Well, you know, Ashley, and this drives you crazy, but I'm a firm believer, first of all, in Murphy's Law.
Jesus.
If it can't go wrong, it will.
That doggone Murphy.
You know, secondly, the best thing about being a pessimist is you're never disappointed.
You know, Murphy invented the Murphy bed, right? Remember the Murphy bed that pulls down? You know, because he was probably always in a fight with his wife.
Probably. Yeah,
however,
he was sentenced to the couch.
But Murphy's
there.
Law to me, it's like if you think it's going to happen, you know what? Normally you make it happen.
Well,
yeah.
You
it's
know,
like
actually,
thinking about the worst case scenario. Worst case scenario, it might not be the worst case scenario that happens, but something in between.
Go ahead. I was going to say real quickly, Money. You know, if you get into this is my boy, Money.
What up, TJ Money? What up, Money Clip?
This is my boy here. It's a pattern of thoughts, and if you know, inertia, of course, is one of the most powerful forces in the universe. And if you get into a pattern of thoughts, it's very difficult to get out of it.
Well, and it's going to lead you one way.
Yes.
Well, here's what trumps Murphy, I think, and it's an old guy named Descartes. I never thought the Latin guy that my college philosophy classes would come into play, but you defeat Murphy by, I think, therefore I am.
Totally.
Speak the Latin.
Speak the Latin,
speak
baby.
The Latin.
I think, therefore I am. And
Latin is not dead.
Cogito ergo sum.
E pluribus unum. E pluribus unum.
I think, therefore I am. And you're right. Yeah. You make yourself. And you think, therefore you are. Thoughts are things. You create it. You make yourself what you are. If you think yourself as a slob, this and that, you're going to be that.
That's
if you think yourself as a leader and in charge, you're going to be that too. I mean, you have to work at it. I mean, you can't just.
It works. And you know what? A lot of the listeners know I was an athlete in college and really thankful to have an opportunity to play at that level. And I had to believe, and we talk about those voices in our head, I had to control that because when you're about to walk on the field and there's 100,000 people and you're playing against, you know, a little school down in Austin,
Old school down in Austin.
Or, you know, a big old school out in LSU. You gotta believe that you're the best person on that field. You gotta believe that I'm the toughest guy on this gridiron. You gotta believe that I'm the winner and I'm gonna win this game, because if not, any room for error, that reality will not manifest itself. You gotta believe that.
Well, it's like a team. Okay, so like when a team comes in and obviously they have like the morale is down. Like it's been a long season and they're looking at this team going, I'm never gonna win. This is gonna, you know, when morale is down on a team and they're playing somebody.
You can see it.
When they go to halftime and they're losing and they come back and their morale is down, they haven't rechanged their thought process. Yeah. They haven't reclaimed the fact, okay, we might be down, but we can still win. You know when that happens, because there's it's awesome. It's a turnover. You see, you go, oh my God, oh my God, you know, Cinderella story.
You can absolutely tell when a team is beaten before they even play.
It's in their body what?
It's body
in their
language.
Body language.
It's those, in their DNA.
Those thoughts.
They put it in their DNA.
Yeah, those thoughts begin to manifest themselves in the real world by how they carry themselves
and
in their body language.
Eric, you know this from being in a locker room. Negativity can be... What's the word I'm looking for, Ashley? It can be infectious.
Spread?
Infectious, yeah. It's infectious. And so, yeah, that stuff means something. And, you know, the thing about thoughts and all of that, and I remember as a kid thinking about this, interestingly enough, and it just told me or affirmed to me that there's an existence beyond what we see. Okay. There's an existence beyond what we see. There's conversations that are going on that aren't necessarily verbalized. And that's powerful, because that existence that we don't see has the ability through our words and our actions to manifest itself in the world that we do see.
Totally true. I mean, it's like magnetism. It's interesting how you can actually meet somebody, actually not even speak to them, and before you meet them, you can actually feel a good feeling or a not good feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had people that you immediately feel like, oh God. You know what I mean? And it's right. Your brains. It's the brain chemistry. It's all that's actually either positively responding or negatively responding. And I think that's an interesting thing. I know there's some writings about that. I know Napoleon Hill wrote some stuff about that in Think and Grow Rich. And we'll talk about that later on tonight as well. But there is actual scientific, you know, measure to that kind of scenario. And our thoughts, you know, like a lot of times people think, oh, can they read my mind? And I think they can't read the words, but they can definitely read the body language. They can definitely get the hint. Yeah, the energy of where you're at.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I love this. This is a great topic. Thoughts are powerful. Words are powerful. And, you know, in the beginning, what is it, John 1 in the Bible? In the beginning, there was the Word. That's kind of in there for a reason.
You know, Christians believe Jesus is the Word incarnate.
Yeah, yeah,
in flesh and blood. And because if you speak it into existence,
yep,
then it becomes real.
And that's kind of that's important, guys. That's important.
That's true. And you know, thoughts. So you got to think about the positive and negative thoughts. And a lot of people listening tonight are going to need to start checking themselves. And the way you start checking yourselves is you just start listening. You just start listening, because your mind can't be on autopilot. I mean, if it's on autopilot, it's like having the castle with nobody guarding the castle.
You're not really living on autopilot. Life is not autopilot.
Yeah, the drawstring. What is the drawstring? The
drawbridge.
The drawstring. Drawstring's down.
We know where Ashley's brain is tonight.
You know how it is.
Talk about thoughts, Ashley. Where are your thoughts tonight?
I don't know.
Anyway, this is a family show.
I'm not getting in the hot seat today. The hot seat's over there by you. I made sure to
Ashley,
sit.
You're squirming. Why are you squirming?
I'm not
there,
squirming.
Ashley?
I don't know what's
wrong. Ashley wants to break free right now. She wants to break free.
I want
to
run through the Dewey Meadows. No, but yeah, it's like having nobody there to guard. And when you have the mind just going on autopilot, it's like sitting there watching TV and passing out in front of the TV and allowing all that content to go into your subconscious and not even to police it. So you got to start policing your own mind. And so everybody that's listening needs to start seeing what they're really thinking, because that's important, because that'll also put in perspective why you do what you do on a daily basis. Because a lot of times we make decisions based on our thoughts without any sort of evidence, without any sort of call of duty, but it's just what we're thinking. So what happens about our outcomes? Like, think about that. You know, people always think about the future, right? Everybody's always thinking about the future. What do you got going on in the future? What's the future hold? Or they're always thinking about the past. Like, nobody's really living in the present moment. I mean, the present moment's right here.
Present's kind of cool. You got a lot of power in the present.
I'm especially bad at that, Ashley. I will either think about something that's bothering me in the past, or I'm thinking about, okay, you know, tomorrow, next week, next month, whatever, you know, this has to happen, or, you know, gee, you know, when I grow up, I want to be like this, you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to stay in the present and concentrate on.
Why do you think it is?
You know, in my case, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I think I tend, you know, with what I'm doing at the moment, I tend to go into autopilot, my subconscious, and my thoughts are elsewhere. Maybe just a function of my ADD. I don't know.
Yeah, that's part of ADD. ADD is something like it's very much that way. And there's some strategies you can do. You know, obviously there's medication, but there's strategies that you can do to start teaching your mind things, you know, list making, what have you, but also just identifying and realizing where your thoughts are. I mean, there's a million times you drive down the highway and you see people driving and you know that not one of them is thinking about driving down the highway.
They're, you know, texting or talking on their cell phones, or
they're just driving with, you know, no paying attention whatsoever.
I've done that. I have to be honest with you. I've done that.
You just get there and you go, oh, I'm here.
Yeah. And how did I get here?
Yeah. You don't even think about it. And it's like that you're driving a 5,000 pound vehicle.
Yeah.
All the way there. You should be in the moment. And there's some old adages that we'll talk about later, and some old, you know, some Japanese, some old Chinese, I guess I was basically back about the concept of, what is it? Was it like cut wood or something? What, chop wood, carry water. And the concept of chop wood, carry water. And the whole concept behind that was like doing the dishes. Like, you need to be mindful, even in the smallest of things that you consider small, whether that's washing the dishes and really thinking about, okay, I'm sudsing up this, I'm cleaning this, I'm wiping this down, I'm putting this in the respectable drawer.
The Karate Kid, wax on, wax off.
Wax on, actually, wax
off. I was about to say, she sounds like Yoda here. You know, it's like, this one, a long time have I watched. All the time he has looked away to the future, to the horizon, never his mind on where he was.
That is awesome.
And that's my best Yoda impression. So I apologize for all the Star Wars.
Very good.
Very good, young Bill.
Somebody lock the door before Darth Vader shows up, man. Wow.
Now that one I can do. Luke, I am your father.
You know what, Luke? We'll be back here in a second because we're going to talk more about thoughts. We're going to talk more about the nature of our thoughts and living in the present moment. And I want to hear more Darth Vader impressions when we get back. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess on 660 The Answer.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been discussing thoughts, what your thoughts do for you, and now we're discussing more about how you can live in the present moment. You know, a lot of us live in the past, a lot of us live in the future, creating these futures, like thinking about these, what's the outcome, what's going to happen, what's going to happen in my life, is it a positive, is it negative, and we're trying to create all these futures in our life, you know, as well as looking back at the past with either great nostalgia or hatred or anger, you know, and a lot of times the past can give so much stress to people, but also our minds have a tendency of doing what? They change the past. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but that's the reason why people wrote down history. Okay, they wrote down things because guess what? If we all were supposed to remember it, our versions would be completely different. I mean, think about if we had to just speak our version of what happened in the last election. Think about what would go down.
You know what they say, you know, the victors write history.
The victors write history. Yeah. Or they say history is his story.
His story, right.
It's all his perception.
Yeah, it's all his. You know, the funny thing about that is I could be in a conversation and I'll use, you know, with my wife, and we'll hear the exact same thing at the exact same time, but our interpretation of what we heard is completely different, you know, a lot of times. And that's a human thing.
Yep.
Hey, have you ever had that? I want to go off topic just a second, but it's not really. Have you ever been around someone and you started thinking about a song in your head, not speaking it, not singing it, hearing it in your head, and all of a sudden, within a few seconds later, that person next to you starts singing it?
No, I haven't.
No.
Oh my God, I've had that happen a dozen times.
No.
I had it happen the other day, and I was like, and they were like, what? I was like, I was just thinking that song. Wow. And they're like, that's wild. So, I mean, I think thoughts can actually go into the collective subconscious.
Now, look at the big thoughts on Ashley.
I was going to say, she's getting really deep. I mean, I've been around people where I was thinking something and then someone said it. words, but songs, no.
Music is more, but okay, for you to think something and somebody said it is more, even more difficult than a song, because a song has some sort of melody conception, which is easier to basically take for another person. That's why when we have so much gravitational pull to emotion on music.
Well, I mean, you know, Eric, I mean, haven't you, it's like, I was just thinking that. You know, somebody says something. But I was just thinking that.
Not song, though. Not song,
You
though.
Haven't had that happen?
I had song, though.
Oh, my gosh, I have that happen with people, especially people that are around me a lot. It happens like that. And it can be a song that I haven't even thought about in years. A song that I haven't heard in years. And all of a sudden, they'll be like, you know, they'll just start going on, you know, I picked a plum from the, what is it, Tree of Life, and da-da-da-da. and I would have just been thinking that song going, oh, my God, and how many people sing that out loud? I mean, you know, it's crazy. But think about that, what you were saying about having the same thoughts and then somebody saying it. Think, that's interesting, because it's almost a positively, could be positively or negatively infectious to have your thoughts like that. So in a way, people can actually read your mind.
I have had, though, hey, you know, you call somebody, I was just thinking about you. Or you get a text from somebody, I was just thinking about you. But the song thing, that's different. That's different.
Okay, so think about the phone call. So everybody listening tonight, you were just thinking about somebody and the phone rings.
Yeah.
Or they text you. And you go, oh, my God, I was just thinking about you. So what's that about?
Well, I mean, the few times that's ever happened to me, it's because I was kind of expecting either a call or a text.
Because you had made the thought in your head.
No, it's because, like, in a previous conversation or whatever, it's like, okay, well, he said, you know, this person said they might call me later tonight or tomorrow or whatever.
Cause that's different, though.
We were just, see, I mean, what you're talking about, that's not happened to me.
And it happens to me like 6 times a day. I mean, like before breakfast, like people like call or text and I'll be like, oh my God.
You're weird, though. I mean, we all know that. You're weird.
Mad at me. Mad at you, I am. Yeah.
But no, I mean, knowing you like I do over the years, I mean, you know, you're just on a higher plane, more so than most people.
She's evolved.
God bless you, Bill.
So, you know, I mean, what's normal for you, I don't think is normal for the 90% of the population.
I'm taking you out for a beer after this.
Oh, wow. That's how that works.
A non-alcoholic beer.
So here's the example, folks. Bill really wanted a beer. Okay.
And so I was thinking I transferred my thoughts.
Exactly.
Yes.
There was an intended outcome to this dialogue. And look, bing, you got a beer.
So you envisioned beer and then created the present form to, okay, well, I don't know if that could happen. However, no, I see what you're saying, but I mean, everybody can be where I'm at. I mean, everybody can think that way. Everybody can. And it's interesting, too, because when you kind of gravitate to that level, other people gravitate with you.
That's true. And I think you attract people that aspire to be at that level.
Well,
you know,
Eric and Ashley, haven't y'all ever heard the term groupthink?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it absolutely, a group of people can start thinking the same thing.
Let me give you an example. I'll give you an example. And I know I've used the example early on the show, and Ashley's been able to kind of be involved with some athletes here in the recent history. And one of the things about being an athlete, a football player in particular, I was a defensive back in college. And, you know, it's called being in the zone. When, as a defense, you're moving as one body, as one unit, physically in the field of competition, I could cover a receiver and the free safety behind me would know exactly what I'm thinking or know exactly what I'm about to do, and we all move as one secondary or one unit. And I've experienced that, and that's a pretty powerful experience to where you just look back and you just point to a guy, and he points back, and you just had a complete conversation without sharing a word. That's pretty powerful. And that's the part of being an athlete, which I've always thought was a spiritual experience and an artistic experience that a lot of people who don't compete at a high level, they don't get a chance to experience that. And it happens.
Well, and I've also, I've never really experienced this directly before, but I've heard people, talk about, you know what, we're so close that we just finish each other's sentences.
Yeah.
It could be like twins or really close best friends or spouses. I think it's possible to be so close to somebody that, you know, I mean, you just think like.
Well, it's like, it is true. I mean, I've even had clients of mine that have, you know, either started thinking one way that might not be positive for the relationship, and the other person can feel a change, you know, and it's not directly, they're not even in the same room, but they can feel a change. Like, they're wondering what's happening. Like, is that person, what's happened? And so I think there's also, like, energy movement, as well as, you're right, being on the same playing field and being able to finish each other's sentences. I always think that's very interesting. So think about this. When you're thinking about being in the present moment, we have to stop thinking about the future, what the future holds, because the future is just that. We don't know it. It's there. And we have to really take time and really see what the present moment has to offer, because we can create a future from there without really thinking about, okay, there's always a means to an end. And I think a lot of times, in order to really be in the present moment, we really have to let go of the past. And I think the past is sometimes, for some people, judgment. For some people, it's heartache. And for some people, sadly enough, they see it as the best years of their life. I mean, and we know people like that. I mean, I'm sure everybody that's listening tonight that's ever been to their high school reunion, you know, like three or four people from your high school that you thought were the coolest people in the world in high school. Like, they had it all going. I mean, everything about their whole life was amazing.
High school.
And you're like, God, they're the coolest, you know. But then you go to the reunion and it's like the best years of their life were in high school. And the sad part about it is the reason why it's the best years is because they probably continue to tell themselves ever since high school, my best years of my life were in high school. It's never going to get any better than this.
Yeah, I get it. I that's why I don't go to reunions today.
I was just about to say, Money.
Love reunions.
I've never been to my high school reunion and don't intend to. Well, for one thing, I hated high school. It was not the best days of my life, you know, put it that way. But
I forgot. Where's Waldo?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But also too, I mean, for what you just said, I don't want to get stuck living in the past.
Yeah, or people viewing you in that light. That's what it is for me. I don't want to be stuck in how people viewed me back then. I've evolved a little bit.
Yeah,
but I go to reunions. I love reunions. I love going to reunions. My last reunion was awesome.
You're such a socialite.
Actually, you like any social gathering. That's just an excuse for you to be around people. It's not
even
really
my
reunion,
but I'm going anyway.
Yeah, you could go to anybody's reunion. You know,
I've done it a few times.
Who
you go?
Who do you think you're fooling? Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like a groupie at funerals or anything like that. I mean, but you know, I have a friend of mine that's really into funerals. Like, his thing is funerals. Not to meet people.
Sick.
No, he just loves going to funerals because he loves just funerals. I don't know why.
That's disturbing.
I think it's because it's sad, because a lot of times in this lifetime, in this world we're in, most people are too busy to make time while everybody's living. And so the families don't get together until there's an actual death.
Yeah,
and so unless you want to see the whole family, they want to see the whole family. And Aunt so-and-so died. So they're like, and they get giddy. And they don't, they're really sad about the death, but yet they're like, I'm going to see everybody. This is going to be great. And it's like, it's so sad that they're waiting to have a funeral.
Okay, I'm about to impress you, Ashley. I just thought of a movie clip. It reminds me of that guy in Saw.
Never saw Saw.
Nor I.
Saw.
Most people have no idea what it's like to be alive. You know, and that's the reason why he killed everybody, you know, because
that's awful.
But I mean, no, that's what the guy reminds me of.
It's like to be alive.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. No, that's
he's
why
not a bad person. I mean, this person really loves people.
He's trying to liberate everybody.
No, not the Saw guy. I'm talking about my friend that goes to funerals.
But I mean, you know, that's kind of maudlin, though. I mean, just go to funerals to be happy to be alive. I mean, that's like the guy from Saw.
No, he goes there to see his family and relatives. People he hasn't seen. The sad thing is that a lot of times when people know a lot of people, they don't have a tendency of seeing them all the time. And sadly enough, a lot of times we let time pass by and we lose out. I mean, we don't get to see folks, and that's always painful. So when we return, we're going to be talking about more about the present moment and how you can stay there, as well as believing in yourself and how not to continue to find fault, because a lot of times we actually find more fault in ourselves than anybody else. So stay tuned, because guess what? Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess. You know, we'll be back in two shakes. I can lift you up.
I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be. Get in here. Give us your perspective. We're listening. And you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been discussing thoughts. What your thoughts can do for you. And right before the break, we were discussing being in the present moment, how to stay in that present moment. And, you know, I think that's so important, because a lot of times we look toward the past or we look toward the future and we try to create things. However, we miss the time we have right now of just being. And, you know, I know that thoughts can lift us or bring us up, or they can also bring us down. And I know that a lot of times we have these thoughts that actually can either make us feel better about ourselves or stay at a certain level, or we find a lot of fault in ourselves. And I know that people in general are very hard on themselves. Most of us are harder on ourselves than we are on other people. And so looking in the mirror, we find every fault. Every comment we make, it's like, you know, when you're in a conversation and you make a comment and you're thinking, oh, what a bonehead comment that was. I can't believe I said that. You know, other people don't even see the problem with it. And so it's like always over-criticizing, over-judging. And I think a lot of people fall into that category.
Yeah, I agree. I'm my own worst critic.
Me too.
Yeah,
you know, me too.
But once I figured out the power in criticizing myself, because I could make myself feel as low as low could be, then I decided to flip it. You know, and some people may call it egotistical, but you know what? I'm going to say good things about myself, because if I can tear myself down, I can build myself back up.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with believing in yourself and having self-confidence.
Yeah.
I think if more people, you know, try to consciously think of good things about themselves, well, you know, I'm good at this and, you know, things like that, then, you know, they would certainly get through the day much better.
You know, I tell you, we were talking offline here a little bit, and, you know, obviously this is about thoughts, and we'll talk a little bit about words that come from those thoughts. That's why I love kids so much, and not even necessarily my kids. I love my kids, but just being around kids, because there's no filter. Exactly what they're thinking is what they say. And there's something wonderfully authentic about that. There's something wonderfully just kind of organic about that, that I'm attracted to. I mean, it's like, you know, kids, it's like, it's what they're thinking.
Remember the old TV show, Kids Say the Darndest Things?
Kids Say the Darndest Things.
You know, which is why, by the way, parent, or tip to all the parents out there, be careful what you say in front of your children.
Well, you know why that is, though. So you know why kids actually are able to say anything they want to say in the beginning is because there is no judgment.
There's no judgment.
It's not until they get around other kids and other people that say, that's stupid, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, or be quiet, you're making no sense, or you should be quiet when you're not talking about something you don't understand. And when those things happen, that's when a kid sits there and goes, okay, I need to filter what I say, and I'm going to be very surfacey about this because I don't want to put myself out on a limb. And so what happens is, over a period of time, over the years and years and years, that's how adults become so stuck in their little cocoon going, oh my God, if I show my true colors, if I show my true butterfly wings, guess what's going to happen? You know, they're going to cut my wings.
Is that why? And, you know, just thinking about Robin Williams, he's been on a lot of people's mind here recently. Is that why we love comedians so much? Because they just say whatever the heck's on their mind, you know, and they're not afraid. And that's what I love. You know, Richard Pryor, Robin Williams, you know, Seinfeld, all of them, they just say what's on their mind, and they're rewarded for that.
Yeah, but they say it in a joke. So again, they're too scared to actually say it out the way that they mean because they know that they have to convey it in a way that's palatable to people.
I don't know about Richard Pryor.
I was just about to say, you know, because I'm a fan of Richard Pryor too. And I think he would actually say funny things to cover up what he was feeling inside. And, and from what I hear, you know, maybe Robin Williams is the same thing. He was battling depression. Actually, kind of a sidebar here a little bit, Ashley, but I was saying to a friend when I heard about Robin Williams' death, you know, there's been a lot of comedians over the years who've committed suicide.
Most comedians are major depression. They have major depression. Yeah.
That's why they're funny.
Unfortunately,
exactly. They suffer from major depression, and that's why they're a comedian. That's why they do what they do.
It's their therapy.
And that's the thing, is that you have to sit there and look at reasons why people do, and that's what a comedian's about. I mean, like, they normally hide their feelings. There are some comedians. I think Jerry Seinfeld is pretty middle ground. I mean, I don't think that he has like suicidal tendencies or something like that, but I do think most of them are hiding their true feelings. I mean, over a period of time, and that's Jim how they Belushi. Probably got into the humor scenario to begin with.
So Ashley, since we're in the last segment of this hour, then let me ask you this question then, you know, along the same lines, conscious thoughts versus subconscious thoughts.
Ooh, nice. Okay? Nice.
I mean, you know, cause you know, comedians, you know, like I said, you know, they're consciously, you know, trying to say something funny. Okay. But maybe it's reflecting something in their subconscious. I mean, most people, depending on the level filter, and I think you consciously have to have a filter in place in order to hide your true, you know, thoughts and feelings. But, you know, you can tell sometimes when someone's in an unguarded moment, and you know what they're saying is actually reflecting, you know, their true subconscious self.
Well, it's interesting because when people are honest and truthful, it opens the doors to lots of other things. And so when it opens the doors to how other people might think, as well as it might unhinge some people. You know, you have people that are living on like this, you know, in the sandcastle where they've created this whole sand world where everything is this way. And so when somebody imparts the truth, one, sometimes it just overwhelms a person to the point where they don't understand what that person's talking about, yeah. or they don't see it, or they don't really get it, or it might actually open Pandora's box to the point of, oh my God, you know, and kids do that. And I try to be like that. I try to be more like a kid. And when you ask about the conscious and subconscious, to me, though, I think every thought we have, honestly, is clearly conscious, except for when we're sleeping. I think that if we really listen to our minds, we know exactly what we're thinking. I think that a lot of times we try to turn that off. I think a lot of times we try to filter it. And the other problem is that our ego plays a big part in this. Ego. So the ego itself is trying to divide you from yourself. So the ego actually comes in and says, I'm in charge of this guy. And, you know, remember Men in Black, that one where they had like the guy and he had like the little alien guy in his head?
Yes.
So that's like the ego is that alien guy in your head. And then the rest of your body's just kind of moving around. And that alien guy is like, I'm in charge of you. You know, and that's what your mind does too, is your brain actually tries to control things different from your heart. So it's trying to override everything you know. And so as a kid, we're really going from the heart space. We're really walking in it with our hands open and saying, you know, I really love this, because we haven't experienced any put downs, judgments, all these issues. Even though in a previous show, we were talking about, you know, a lot of kids that are raised without one adult or not raised with a father in dealing with that kind of situation as well. And at an early age, when you're taught certain things or you overhear certain things, that can cause a lot of changes in your life.
Well, you know, Ashley, I mean, that's how we measure maturity in our society, I guess, is your ability to compartmentalize, to filter, you know.
The funny thing is compartmentalizing doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I'm an evolved human, and I'm going to suppress and compartmentalize and be completely inauthentic. Yeah.
So maybe we should be more childlike.
Well, yeah, that's like why people go postal. That's why things happen. They compartmentalize till all of a sudden they go, bam, I'm done.
You don't see kids, you know, going through, hopefully not a lot of them going through depressive issues. They're pretty happy most of the time when they're in a healthy environment. So,
well, every now and then, you know, something snaps but you're right. Yeah. It seems to me most kids, you know, especially little kids.
Yeah.
You know, are just, you know, they have that innocent, you know, natural state of mind, and it's a wonderful thing to see. And then they grow up.
Yeah, then they grow up, and we put standards on them. So, yeah.
Well, you know, and the mind plays tricks on us. You know, the older we get, we think how smart we are, how intelligent we are, how better we are than anybody else, how we're so much more advanced, how other people have no idea what you're going through because your life is so much harder than anybody else's, or I am just so busy. There's nothing I can do. I mean, I can't spend time with these people. I can't talk to these people. I'm too busy. I'm the busiest person I know. And it's like you create all these concepts in your head, and all of a sudden there you are, just like going from place to place. You're in your mind the whole time. You have no freaking idea what's going on, and you go through life that way, and eventually in your deathbed you go, holy crap,
I missed the whole boat.
I missed it all because it wasn't about the journey. It was about getting from A to B. And when I got to B, it was about going from B to C. Yeah. And when I got to C, now I'm at Z, and holy crap, I missed it all. Yep. I miss it all. I mean, do I get to have is there a slideshow? Is there a film?
Game over.
When I pass on, game that I can over. See what I missed?
And not to be just overly philosophical about it, but people have said it's not about the destination, it's the journey.
It's the journey.
It is the journey. That's not overly, but that's what a kid sees, because a kid lives in the present moment
right now,
all the time.
Right now.
A kid doesn't live in the past. A kid doesn't live in the future, because it's all about now. I mean, look at the buildings. Look at this. Look how big that is. Look at that bug.
You know?
Check out my dog. I'm going to go walk with my dog.
Look,
I'm gonna
mommy,
go to the playground.
Look at that. You know, yeah.
What is that? What's that? What's that? You know, and it's just like all the while of being in now, we just like go from point A to point B like we do in that car and forget where we're going, what we're doing. We get there. We miss the whole drive there. The kid's best part is driving there. It's like a dog with their head out the window
regardless
the whole time.
Of where you're going.
They love it. They're like, wow, we get in the car again?
Well, we're going
it's
to
great.
The, we're going to the store around the corner? Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go, you know?
Unless they know you're taking them to the vet. But that's another
the
show entirely.
The kid or the dog.
Both.
Exactly.
Fluffy's not the only one going to the vet today. Yeah, poor daughters. Funny. So yeah, when we return, we're going to be talking now. We're going to be changing the tables, reversing this whole concept and going from thoughts to what we actually say and how what you say can actually better your life or worsen your life with every single word. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and entertainment, where relevant topics are discussed and where what you think counts. And where superior is the norm. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, live on 660 The Answer.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been discussing thoughts and how your thoughts are actually things. Your thoughts can create your life, can create a future, can also be positive or negative in nature. You know, but thoughts are one thing, but what about our words? What about what we say? What we say is so important to how we live our life. Every word we utter can create something in our life, whether it's positive or negative. And a lot of times we don't really think about the words we choose. We don't analyze the reason why we say what we say, and we also sometimes say things that we don't really even know what the meaning is, honestly. We do it because it's cachet, it's pop culture, or it's just something that we've heard a dozen times, and so we just kind of say it. There's certain phrases that we have in America and across the country and across the world that we use a lot that we don't always know what it means. So let's begin with the phrases we use to describe our life. I think it's interesting some of the phrases and the comments that people use on a daily basis to describe their life, whether it is to other people, whether it's the written word, whether it's the spoken word. All of this is very interesting because it really does define you, and it shows a lot about you, and I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, words have meaning. I think that's kind of cliche, like you were saying, but words have meaning, and a lot of times unless someone is just really conscious of the filter that they have, then they reflect your subconscious thought, what you're really thinking and feeling.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. But I think, if we go a deeper version too as well, what about the actual words we use? Sometimes we use these really negative words to describe ourselves. And I'm sure everybody here in the studio and everybody listening can actually say, even if they look at social media feed, what they see on a social media feed in the morning is unbelievable. I mean, stuff like I could barely get out of bed, or I'm lucky to be alive, or this is the worst life of my life, or F my life, or whatever you see out there. And you're thinking, oh my God, you're saying this and you're writing this. So in order to write this, you have to think this. It's part of it.
All they are, I think, is just a medium of communication. There are other media of communication, writing or, body language and stuff like that.
Words are the ones that really matter the most. I mean, that syntax really matters the most. I mean, what's the old saying? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, that is a complete lie.
It absolutely is.
It is. And whoever came up with that saying, I mean, I don't know what was going through his head.
By the way, Ashley, I think we've made a lineup change here in the studio here on hour two.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Chris is in here. You're behind the glass now, which is cool. We can keep you there. We can watch you where you're at.
Yeah, I can't hide from you now.
Yeah. You're not getting away with it. Oh, and by the way, I think somebody said that you're the father of their child.
Oh, they caught me.
Hour two, father of the child.
Yes.
This show is taking a turn for the better.
Thanks a lot, Ashley.
It's no more about words. It's about testing DNA. It's 99.9% chance that you are the father of the child. Oh,
dioxic ribonucleic acid.
But we got to welcome my boy Keenan into the studio.
Keenan's in the house.
Yeah, I just got back from my art studio that I had to go photograph, and I have a bunch of raw that I need to edit.
You working on the weekends, bro?
Saturday
night. Yeah. We are working on the weekends. I'm like, we have an artist who came through, actually a local artist. He lives in Bishop Arts, and he has this really great exhibit at over at Richmond College. So I went there, took a bunch of photographs, and I'll probably be putting that up on the social media, because with what I do for a living, I'm actually on social media.
Wow.
all day.
Awesome. So you know what I all, yeah, so, you know what
yeah,
I'm speaking
I'm no, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, my entire job is focused around media.
So, I mean, so we like Ashley was saying, so when you see on someone's Facebook or Twitter, you know, Instagram, whatever, and, you know, can't you just tell that they're, you know, in a negative mood or whatever?
Well, it all depends on that person, because the thing is, sometimes you cannot tell, because the thing about words, when you see words on a screen or when you see words in text, the feelings and the emotions and, you know, a lot of times the context behind those words do not exactly translate. You know, for example, somebody might post something on Facebook and they might just be sarcastic,
right?
You know, and it all depends on how close you are to that person, knowing that, you know, knowing how they are. Because I know a friend of mine posted the other day, she posted, "Congratulations, I'm going to be a mommy."
Yeah, you know,
here's the thing. It was not true. I knew it was not true because
what,
the thing
what's
is,
going on?
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of people are like, "Oh, congratulations," you know, and you know, liking the status and like making all these comments on the status. I did not because I knew. I'm like, "Hold on, something's up," because right. The thing is, she posted that without any context.
Well,
and she always posts with context, but that one was different.
When it comes to social media, I think a lot of the stuff having to do with words has to do with intention. What the intention is of the person who's putting those words out there into the universe. So for your friend on Facebook, the intention was probably, let's get some attention here. Let's bring people to pay attention to me. And a lot of the time it does work. And you know, the sad thing is that there are cases where somebody will post something on Facebook or Twitter and the attention is not garnered when it should be. And I think that that's something that we really have to look at as a social media culture to make sure that we're being active in what we're putting our intentions towards.
I agree. I think that words are very important. And I think our thoughts are, it's the hierarchy. You have thoughts and then you have words, and that's just the way it is. And your thoughts always conceive first. But yeah, you're right. When you look at social media, you look at these different things and you just listen to people in passing, or you listen to the way that they describe themselves. That's what's so interesting to me, because I get to know more about that person. I have a finger on the pulse when they tell me things about themselves and they don't even realize what they're doing. And a lot of times it can either be quite derogatory. It can be very victimish. I'm a victim. But not saying I'm a victim, but all of these things happen to me. Also, or maybe I have no control of my life because I'm out of control. You can kind of read between the lines when people talk about things because they use words. And I agree with you, Chris, about people have gotten out of hand with posting whatever they post. And then there's situations that really need attention and nobody gives that attention because they're so used to all this crap. I mean, because they don't even know what's real anymore. You know, they're just kind of trying to go through it and muddle through it and figure if they can find some sort of reality in it.
You know, and of course, there's the internet troll. You know, to get on social media just to stir up stuff, you know, and you can do it from the safety of your mother's basement or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
If I was going to ask you how to describe yourself, how would you describe yourself, Bill?
Oh, my gosh. See, and I'm, you know, I'm almost the last person you want to ask something like that, because and in fact, if we have time, you know, I had a kind of an argument with my girlfriend over the weekend. And, you know, part of it was I had to explain to her, you know, I'm not really good at translating my thoughts and feelings into words.
Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, maybe it's because from an early age, and we kind of got into this last hour, I was by nature and also by being taught to kind of suppress my feelings.
I think it's a male thing, too, the detachment of the emotional concept to put into words. However, right. I do think it's a crutch for the male society, because everybody says, oh, he's just a guy.
Yeah, we don't do that.
He can't see his emotions, therefore can't put them into words. I mean, maybe if we were on Mars together and we saw like this other group of aliens and you and I couldn't put into words what they look like, that would be one thing. However, yeah. I think men have gotten off year after year, decade after decade, century after century on not being able to speak their emotions. I mean, I understand you're a guy, but really, I mean, you know.
But also, I think it's also my nature, too. You know me. I mean, I'm kind of introverted.
So let's talk about this argument. What happened?
Well, okay. So, you know, the week before, we were at an outdoor concert, and she got heat exhaustion and almost fainted. She had to go to the emergency room, actually. So we were planning on doing something with her family the next weekend. And I was not in favor of it because they had to, like, you know, put IV bags in her and all that good stuff. And she wasn't feeling good throughout the whole week. So I was kind of gently trying to suggest her, you know, we don't have to go out. We can just stay in, you know, and I'll you know, bring over a pizza or whatever. But, you know, she was, you know, determined to do it. And I was frustrated and scared, frankly, that something else is going to happen. So I was going to send a text to my sister, you know, saying, you know, well, she's going to go, you know, hashtag told you so. Because I had spoken to my sister the previous night, you know, I was like, well, you know, hey, this is what happened to Jen and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, to make a long story short. So anyway, I accidentally sent that text to her.
Great one.
And, you know, the girlfriend instead of my sister. And so the girlfriend blows her stack, you know, because, see, she didn't understand the context. This is what I tried to explain to her. You know, I had spoken to my sister the previous night.
And told her that you were going to go no matter what.
Right. And
against my thought process and better judgment.
But, you know, so I had to explain to her, look, a lot of times I will use sarcastic humor to cover
because
up.
Because you're scared.
Cover up when I'm scared, when I'm angry, when
well,
I'm
most
frustrated.
Most people do. Okay, so yeah. Most people do. It's almost like the concept of the hospital. So you got like a loved one in the hospital and everybody's there early. Like that, there's a surgery and the very next morning, everybody, you know, all the certain people get there at 6 a.m., whatever. You show up at 3. You show up at 3 in the afternoon because you can't deal with seeing them in that bed.
Right.
We'll talk more about that when we go to break, after we go to break and come back, because that is an essential issue with what we deal in life, because people use different things, different words to cover up how they're truly feeling. And we'll talk more about the male perspective. Anyway, stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in, we'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim up bar. Glass of perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been talking about thoughts, how thoughts are things, but also how our words really describe our life, really explain who we are, can actually put us into a good place or put us into a trap. You know, right before the break, Bill was talking about a recent argument that he had with his girlfriend, and how basically he sent the wrong text message that was supposed to go to his sister to his girlfriend, and it was more of an LOL kind of, what do you call that? You weren't dealing with your emotions, but you were being...
I was being male about it.
You
know?
Yeah, but
I mean, I was being, you know,
sarcastic
about it. And, you know, because, you know, my sister understands my sense of humor.
But you also use that sense of humor, like we talked earlier about a lot of the comedians, how they hide their real feelings.
Right.
They use humor to hide their feelings. And so you use this off-putting humor, pissing her off, upsetting her to a point where, you know,
she thought I was making fun of her. And, you know, after she explained it and after I thought, okay, if I got that text message just out of the blue, you know, I probably would be a little upset too. So I don't blame her for being upset. By the way, Jen, I love you, baby, and I'm still sorry, but
you're still in the doghouse. Yeah,
no, actually, we talked about it. We kissed and made up, you know. So
I don't want to hear about it.
Well,
this is a family show.
I was gonna say this is a family show.
I want to hear about makeup stuff
during the break. I'll tell you about it. But
I don't want to hear about it.
Actually, I got video too. But no.
Oh my god.
but anyway, yeah. So I'm not in the doghouse anymore. But anyway, you know, it was a good lesson learned. First of all, you know, watch who I send my text to. Double check it.
Maybe this is a lesson about dealing with your feelings. I mean, you know, it comes a time when you might need to just open up and say, "Hey, I'm a little scared. I had to drag you out to the ER because you were dehydrated and all this stuff. I got to watch them do all this stuff to you. You know, treat you like a pincushion, and now you want to go to some party." I mean, you're not even thinking about your own life. Why do I have to think about it? I mean, that would be my comment to her.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what I was feeling. And
so maybe this is a lesson to say, okay, I need to use my words more authentically than using it just to kind of, you know, haha, LOL. I want to die.
Yeah. I mean, but I think, you know, from my perspective, when we talked about this, you know, I'm going to make a concerted effort in the future that if something is bothering me or upsetting me, then I'm going to be proactive and say, hey, look, you know, I'm awkward talking about it, but let's talk about this.
Let's talk about this. So let's open the round table up tonight on this. So the emotional content. Okay. So if you can't put your emotions into words, okay. But at one point in time when you were a child, you could enunciate and explain how you felt honestly. Okay, honestly, to a degree, you could tell mom or you could tell somebody how you felt. I mean, that's basically what is so important about what we're talking about, is basically going back to that time in your life where you could honestly express yourself in an honest way without fear of judgment. I mean, because that's what it's all about, truly.
Yeah, I think that today, a lot of the time, especially for guys, there's a kind of negativity towards discussing feeling, because we're supposed to be so strong that we almost are supposed to deny that we have feelings, whether it's from the, you know, the kind of the John Wayne image of the past, or, you know, more recent images through action movies and that type of stuff. But we really need to kind of look at ourselves and say, you know what, I feel, and there's nothing wrong with that. And really, it's something that I should embrace and I should grab onto, because it's going to make me more of a complete person and make my thoughts and my words more genuine.
I agree with that. And I know a lot of people listening tonight might be like, well, that's a lot easier said than done. And I understand that, but I think when you start doing it, it becomes easier. It's just like anything else. And if people have issues with you and they make judgment on you, those are the people that you consequently eliminate from your life, or you put distance between them. And even if it's family, you can distance yourself.
Well, yeah, I have, you know, distanced myself from a lot of people, actually, you know, ever since I've been back in the United States. You know, with the whole, you know, feeling and stuff like that, you know, I think it's with the particular environment that I was in, that a lot of people are not in or will never be in, is that we can only express really one emotion, and that's anger. And that's it. But the thing is, though, with all the things.
He was in war, by the way. For anybody that's not, that doesn't know, Keenan fought in war. And so, yes, he would be able to deal with anger.
Right. Anger. So, but the thing is, though, you know, with all the things that were happening, you know, pretty much daily, except during Ramadan, you know, we are being attacked. And so, yeah, there's a lot of fear. The thing is, though, you cannot express that fear. You just can't, because the thing is, though, it's not only about yourself, but it's about the person beside you, you know. And if the person beside you thinks that you're just too, you know, I guess, well, chicken's not the right word for, I always say just, chicken for some reason. Just, I don't know why.
You know, weakness.
You're just too emotional. I mean,
exactly. You know, you're too emotional. And, you know, and that's one of those arguments that come up when, you know, whenever it comes to, you know, like say women being in the military and anything like that, or going off to war.
Well,
and
think about
the emotion
men.
Thing.
Think about men with PTSD. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about this. The reason why PTSD, and the reason why there's so many issues after war, is because they didn't deal with their feelings at the time that it happened. So it's all compartmentalized to when all of a sudden, right? All of a sudden, the bombs start to stop going off because you're back at your home again. You know, the shooting and the gunfire is no longer going on. It might be in your mind, but it's not actually happening. And that's what all brings about a lot of these problems, is because emotionally nothing is being adequately dealt with at all, period.
Well,
compartmentalize it. We're in war.
Well, on top of that, though, like when you come back, a lot of the people that you interact with, they have no idea, you know, about what happened over there, or like what goes on over there. You know, a lot of the stuff that, you know, they base the military off of is through stories, pretty much, you know, because like whenever I meet someone, you know, I've met people that say, you know, oh yeah, my grandfather was in the military. He was in World War II. Well, everyone's grandfather was in World War II, because there was something called a draft. But I know why they say it. I know why they use those words, so they can seek some kind of common ground.
We're together,
with me.
Man. I have military people too, man.
Yeah, exactly. We're together. When the reality of it is like, no, we're not together. You're like, we're not together. Like those words, you know, do you have my six? Those words mean a lot in the military, as opposed to, you know, in the civilian world, when you say to someone, do you have my six? You say the word six, they're like, six what? It's not right. 6 o'clock
you
yet.
Know, those people, I mean, they mean it in a good way, though.
Well, yeah, they mean it in a good way.
I take your point that there's no way they can know what you're going through.
It's just that they don't, you know, they don't take it to heart like, for example, you know, there's a saying that a lot of, you know, that we use in the African American community, and that is this: do you feel me? Like, if I'm speaking to you, not do you understand, but do you feel me? Do you feel what I am saying to you? I mean, because anyone can, like, you know, intake all these words and they can process
it. Do the words have feeling? That's
exactly,
the key.
Do,
you,
exactly.
do your words do have feeling? Do they have any meaning? Do they come from an actual space in your heart?
Are they real?
Or are they just being said? And I think your issue and my issue would be, too, if I thought I don't agree necessarily with war. And that's kind of an issue because there's all these backstories of why we go to war. And it has nothing to do with you or any of us. It has to do with people that we probably won't ever be in contact with. However, what would anger me the most about being in war is to come back into civilian life and to have seen all that stuff. It's almost like Buzz Aldrin and all that, going to the moon and going to space and seeing this stuff and not able to really talk about it, not able to speak about it, and maybe some of it not really wanting to really rehash it, you know? And I think that's consequential too, and that also becomes part of the subconscious and part of our internal thought mechanism, you know?
You know, I mean, maybe we can put it this way, actually. In order for words to have meaning, there has to be a shared context, a shared experience.
Or they might not be, but you have to be able to understand. You can see that person. You can understand that their situation is just as viable as
right.
your situation. You might not be walking in their shoes, but you understand. You see their shoes. You see them, and you respect where they're going.
Because otherwise, you know, the other person may as well be speaking Greek. Because you know,
it's all Greek to me.
Yeah, you know,
yeah. I mean, it's all Greek to me. Whenever I see the uptown girl, you know, and she's telling me about her first world problems, about how the Wi-Fi is slow. You know, that sounds like Greek to me.
It's like, oh my God, you know, the latest Gucci bag, you know?
Yeah, that sounds like
nothing to K-Money. Yeah.
Yeah, that means nothing to me at all.
And it's okay to say that. It's okay to let somebody know that you don't have that shared common interest with them. And maybe you haven't had that same experience. As, you know, I've never been to war. And it's one of those things where, you know, I've read lots of books about war. I've seen documentaries. I've done all of that stuff, but I don't know war. So it's one of those things that it's okay to say that.
And that's why we have like documentaries, and that's why you have people that have been through different experiences.
Oh, yeah. Ken Burns. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and there's also like the whole concept of let's bring it off from war, because I think a lot of people listening tonight know what it's like to maybe be raised without a father or a mother, or to have a distant parent or a parent that leaves you in the mid part of your life. And people that have never had that happen to them instinctively don't understand what it's like to have an estranged parent, or to not understand, or to pray for your parent, or to have almost like a love issue where you love them, but yet you can't ever trust them or put trust into them. And we'll talk more about that when we return from break, because a lot of times people don't understand where you're coming from. But I think that the words that we describe where we're coming from can bring it around and people can understand more clearly. So stay tuned, because we're going to talk more about emotions and feelings, about how you can project what you actually believe about yourself and others, as well as how to check your words and how to check your thoughts. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess on 660 The Answer.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been talking about how thoughts are things. We've been exploring that concept, as well as how our words really dictate our life. And I think a sidebar is needed at this point, because I think a lot of times we use phrases, we use comments, we use these old-time phrases that we've been brought up with, and we use them to describe a lot of things. And recently, I was in a meeting discussing a recent real estate scenario that kind of went awry, and the person I was talking to said, in the same conversation, he said, you know, they took a bath on the deal. And I was like, interesting. I was like, and they go, and they're all washed up, by the way. And all this was said in like the same paragraph of words, right? And I was thinking, they took a bath on the deal. I mean, what comes to mind when you hear they took a bath on the deal? I mean, to me, it's like, I mean, if you were a dog, you'd be like, not a bath again. I hate getting wet. But I mean, what does it mean like to a human being? They took a bath on it.
I mean, it means to me that, you know, they were dirty and they needed to clean themselves. I mean, that's kind of in the context of what you're talking about, that's kind of
they took a bath on the deal. They were saying they lost a bunch of money.
Yeah.
They were saying they lost a bunch of money on this deal and they took a bath on it. To me, yeah, it's like, how does that work? I mean, how does bath mean you're losing all this money? Or how does bath mean, do you get what I'm saying? I mean, because people use these comments all the time. What about, you know, the concept of they're all washed up? I mean, how is washed up being bad? But in our context, we use it as they're yesterday's news.
Yeah, they're done. Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing about the English language, how we have all these phrases and idioms and metaphors and whatnot to describe whatever. For example, I mean, like the word fat, you know, has like three different meanings.
And depending on how you spell it, too.
Yeah, it depends on how you spell it also. But like the word fat has like three different meanings. But at the same time, though, I mean, when it goes like, you know, what, they took a bath on a deal. I mean, that, it may not be the first time that person has ever used that phrase. And it's something that he probably, you know, uses on a regular basis, you know, and he knows what it means. And the thing is, he may think that you're supposed to know what it means, even though you may not know what it means.
I mean, think about if you were from a different country and you spoke English was a second language. You'd be like, they took a bath?
Yeah, you would have no idea what, you know, what they're saying. But the thing is, though, I mean, it goes back to what we were saying, like, what, a week or 2 weeks ago about how everyone is running around with these scripts.
Yeah,
you know, they're all
that hold them back or that help them out.
Yeah, exactly. They're all running around with these scripts, you know, and the thing is like, it's almost predictable about what the other person's going to say. Like, for example, with me, a joke is only funny one time. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Seriously, a joke is only funny one time. Like, if I saw a comedian and I saw Zach and I laughed, guess what? I probably could not see that comedian again. Or even, you know, a movie that is comedic, I could probably only watch that movie once.
Why?
Because I heard it before. A joke is only funny one time. Or like when I'm, you know, talking about, you know, celestial bodies and stuff like that, you know, and I'm talking about how, you know, Neptune has this storm on the side of it and it's made of methane gas. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's right next to Uranus. Notice I said the word Uranus. I know exactly what someone is going to say.
No, it's Uranus.
Yeah, it's Uranus. You know, and the thing is though, they'll laugh and I'll just look at them with this straight face like, see, I know y'all can't see it, but I just made a straight face. Anyways, but that's what I do.
Hey, Keenan just pulled a Burgess. That's the new saying, by the way. He just pulled a Burgess. We're gonna work with that one. That one's going to be in the English language. So I have an answer for everybody that's asked me a question recently. What does two shakes mean? What does three shakes mean? I've been getting all these messages, a lot of emails from y'all, and I do appreciate the mail. It's actually very nice that you send me messages. Okay, so what does shake mean? You know that a shake is actual recognized unit of time. Did you know that? A shake is an actual recognized unit of time. At the time of the first atomic bomb, scientists needed a term for an interval of time equal to 10 nanoseconds. Since two shakes of a lamb's tail is very quick, you know, scientists coined the word shake to describe this unit of time. That is why I say two shakes between each segment, because it's that short. It might not be 10 nanoseconds, but doggone it, it's short.
Well, I mean, first time I ever heard you say it, Ashley, I understood what you're saying because, of course, I come from a rural area, but I'd heard the phrase, you know, two shakes of a lamb's tail. And, you know, I knew that meant, okay, really fast.
Can you believe that scientists adopted that, though? They're in the atomic bomb. Like, when they were, that's kind of funny. They're like, yeah, I mean, so you've got it. But some people have no idea. But they thought I was trying to say some sort of Middle Eastern thing. I've had questions about all kinds of different things, what it means.
But to me, I mean, even though you may not understand what a shake is, I'll be back in two shakes. I mean, you should be able to take an educated guess that means you're going to be back in a, you know.
Yeah, but some people are just unable to take an educated guess.
They're too literal. Yeah,
exactly. They're too literal. Like,
well, let's not get down on the fans now. Let's not get down on the fans.
Well, I'm not getting down on the fans. I'm not getting down on anyone, you know. But the thing is, what I've noticed lately is that people don't know what metaphors are. They don't know what an idiom is. They don't know what a simile is.
And you know why? Because I think it's, you know, the texting Twitter mindset.
Yeah, it's like they don't understand sarcasm.
There's no context.
Yeah, and like people don't understand, like, you know, how language is supposed to be creative, you know, and like how Shakespeare, he made up like, what, 2,000 words? I don't know. I don't have it off the top of my head, but he like just made up all these words.
I make up words every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Like 15 before breakfast.
Yeah, but we use these words every day.
You can't say them in a family channel. Yeah.
No, and I can't tell you a joke. There's a joke that's just going through my head because you said you can't hear jokes more than once. I've had a joke that I was told back when I was 15 that every time I even think about it, I laugh so hard. So I'm trying to hold it back. And I can't talk about it on this show tonight. I will talk about it on break, though, because it is Saturday night. We're supposed to have fun, you know? But no, think about this. Okay, Keenan, what if I said, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater? Keenan, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. What if you said that? You know what that means? You know where that comes from?
Okay, like, where does it come from?
Like, to me, I'm like, what are you doing? You're beating your child? I mean, what are you doing? You can't even think that the child's in the bathtub. You're going to throw it out? 1500s. In the 1500s, you know most people bathed one time a year? Do you know that back in the 1500s, too, that the man of the house bathed first, okay, because the men were better than everybody else. And then all the other males, and then the females, right? And then finally the baby. And so think about how dark and yucky this water is. The mothers actually had to take care not to throw their baby out.
Because the water was so dark that the baby might get lost in the water.
Yeah.
Right.
Which goes against everything we know about health these days. I mean,
don't throw the baby out with the mouth. But you hear people say that all the time in a speech, and they'll be like, well, we're here together because we have to rectify these issues because we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And you're going, okay.
But here's a, and real quickly, actually, here's another, you know, one of those cliche lines, rule of thumb.
Okay, so I know where rule of thumb comes from.
You know where rule of thumb comes from. Keenan knows where it comes from.
It was about beating women in the 17th century.
Right.
English judge Sir Francis Bueller ruled that it was permissible for a husband to beat his wife with a stick, given that the stick was only wider than his thumb.
Yeah, and it was meant in these pre, you know, feminism days, obviously.
You could beat your wife with a stick as long as it was smaller, less wide than your thumb.
Some dudes were using like a, you know, baseball bat or, you know, something like that.
But you could beat your wife. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, nowadays, I mean, think about it. I mean, nowadays, there's cases all the time about whatever, but
yeah,
think
spousal
about
abuse, but yeah.
He beat me with a stick bigger than his thumb.
But it was meant to be protection for women in the system. You know, that way, if you used a bigger stick than that, then the man can be, you know, severely punished for it, you know, because, see, back in those days, you know, again, pre-
the women had to be put in their place.
Well, I mean, you know, but the husband could be held legally responsible for his actions, his wife's actions. Okay, so if the wife stole something, it was the husband that was punished.
Beating. I mean,
I'm not advocating, you know, abuse against women, obviously, but that's where it came from. It was meant to be, you know, kind of like in the Bible. You know, I mean, if based on the Hammurabi Code. You know, it was actually meant to have protections for women. But that's where that, you know, phrase came from. Rule of thumb, you know, it means that this is the guidelines that you use or else.
I was just wondering if there was like a stick police back then, which was going around saying, show me the stick you used. Or that anything
bring
like
out your ruler. Stick.
It sounds a little, it
here's
sounds
a ruler.
Little, you know,
yeah. You bring out one stick in lieu of the other stick. No, this is a stick. You know?
I swear, this is a stick I use. Well, that stick doesn't match up to the beating marks, though. You know, I think across the board, it's something where people have adapted over time and have evolved into new ways of law and order.
Have you ever heard of that one called, happy, let's see, what was it, what is it, pleased as punch? Have you ever heard that?
I've heard that. Okay,
so I had no idea, so I had never really heard that. That wasn't something I was, like, familiar with. Pleased as punch, that means to be very happy, yes, right? You're supposed to be very happy, overly joyed.
Because it's like people will spike the punch with alcohol at parties.
Yeah.
So you drink more than one or two glasses of punch, you're going to get drunk. And so to be pleased as punch means you're happy.
Yeah.
And then you'll be as happy as a clam.
Right.
So. So this is one that's going to get y'all, because this is the true meaning. You want to hear the true meaning of to be pleased as punch, okay? It came from the 17th century puppet show that children, I guess that there was a puppet show for children. It was a puppet show for children, people, okay?
For children.
Called Punch and Judy. Yes. And it featured a puppet named Punch who always liked to kill people. He killed people. And the act of killing people brought him a lot of pleasure. So he felt very pleased with himself after he killed people, and so therefore he was pleased as punch. So therefore, next time you think about that, you're thinking of a mass murderer that gets off on killing other people. This is crazy. So when we return, we're going to talk more about the written word, the words we use to describe ourselves, the thoughts we have, and how you can have a great life when you just make a few little tweaks in what you say and what you do. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes.
I can lift you up. I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be.
Get in here. Give us your perspective. We're listening. And you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been discussing thoughts and how thoughts are things. So everything that you think about actually functionally becomes a thing. It becomes an outcome. About how these outcomes can be measured positively or negative in your mind, and how these thoughts that we have can actually change the outcomes of the things that we deal with. As well as the words that we say out loud, the words we use to describe ourselves, to describe other people, the written word that we also use, all this has meaning. And so let's get into how to change things if you're having difficulty, because I think anybody listening tonight realizes that we're not perfect, okay? You're not perfect. You do say things, you have judgment, you have these issues in your mind. Otherwise, if that wasn't the case, then you'd be like Superman. It just is the way it is. I mean, you'd be perfect. This is the way life is. You'd be a power, unstoppable power. Not even kryptonite could get to you, because that wouldn't have any power, because you would believe it had no power, so therefore it has no power. So let's talk about how you can become more of a superhero than just another person that just feels bad about themselves. So, you know, like, the first thing is we need to look at our thoughts. You need to see your thoughts. And I think everybody in the studio tonight realizes what that is. And Keenan, you talked about that earlier, you know, about these things that we have, these lists, these thoughts, these scripts that we continue to have. And these scripts can be very positive or very negative, and they can cause like a broken record scenario. Like, when you have a script, sometimes you may hear it, sometimes you may not, and those scripts can cause pain in our lives, can cause immense pain.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I just wish that people would say, I guess, what's on their mind, instead of like saying what they think that they're supposed to say. In a way.
And we're getting into that, because I agree with you. It's more like not about judgment. It's about what's honest.
Right.
Right. And so, sadly enough, we allow this judgment or this feeling of being judged or this past judgment predicating how we outwardly get. So when somebody asks us our feelings, instead of saying, you know what, like in Bill's case, you know what, I'm actually really stressed out. We were at the hospital together. I saw this stuff going on.
Yeah.
We're not married yet. And I know, I think we're going down that road, but it scares me to see that you were under that kind of much duress, and now you're gonna really like not even think about your own health and continue to do this while I'm thinking about your health. And I was personally scared. And I think in that situation, it would have been so much easier to say that, even though it's hard to sometimes get past the rhetoric of 5 years ago, I told somebody how I truly felt, and they basically stepped all over me and made me feel bad about it, so I'm not going to do it anymore.
Right, right, right.
And it's like getting past the predication of that sort of thing.
It's a fear of the fear of there being a judgment in the future, and that making you kind of get out of the present, I think. So fear that the words that you're going to say right now are going to lead to a relationship that you have being less full, or somebody returning and judging you based upon what you're saying. And I think in a lot of aspects, it's exactly the opposite of that. I think that when you say what's true and what's genuine, the people around you are going to be way more likely to respond with genuineness and to, you know, they might not agree with you, but they're a lot more likely to say, well, I don't agree with you, but I feel this way about it. And then you can really have a relationship, because a lot of the relationships that people are having these days, I feel is very surface level. It's very, we're going out together, the Facebook friend. Yeah. That, right. You know,
you get what you give. And, right. And I agree with you. If you give authentic, you get authentic. It might not be, okay, I agree with you, Chris. It might not be, I see your point, but you go, oh man, they were authentic with me. I can be honest with them. I feel comfortable. This is a safe place. We're in the treehouse of trust at this point in time. Right. And right. I agree with you, because if you give crap, you're going to get crap, or you're going to have arguments. You're going to have arguments. So if you give kind of what happened, you're going to have that argument.
Yeah.
And there was a fight. And the reason why there was a fight is because there was dishonesty to a degree of the true meaning behind it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, in my case,
not judging you.
No. I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think it was two things. One is that I genuinely didn't want to make it a bigger deal than it was. You know, I mean, because.
But in your head, it was a big deal.
I mean, in my head, it was a big deal, but maybe it's just me. You know, I mean,
but then you can say that. You know, hey, in my head, this is how I feel about it. Maybe it's just me, but you are moping around.
And she and I talked about that. And I think because she's introverted too. And I think that, you know, we're going to try going forward to make a better effort to, you know, directly communicate with each other. And another thing in my case, and we've talked about this before, Ashley, I tend to have like a wall built up around me, and because I don't want to feel vulnerable, so therefore I tend not to communicate what I truly feel, because in my mind that makes me that's showing a weakness.
You know, that's interesting you bring that up, because almost every comedian and most of the people that do commit suicide for some reason or that they hide their feelings and they are vulnerable. And that's something that's sad, because when we do keep our real feelings inside, we become even more like even volatile to a degree, mm-hmm. because we're not honest. And I know that in the beginning, it makes you almost want to throw up when you like say the truth. And especially for men, I know even more so, but a lot of women out there have a problem with dealing with emotions themselves. I went through a lot of process of dealing with my emotions because it wasn't just second nature. I mean, not all women are just like emotional, crazy women. I mean, some people have compartmentalized, or at least thought that they compartmentalized their emotions. That was me till a few years ago. And I realized, wow, I didn't compartmentalize myself. I was just completely detached. And that's not a good thing.
Right.
I mean, you don't find happiness that way. And so I figured out how to be authentic with it.
And vulnerability is a beautiful thing. It's one of those rare moments when you can be vulnerable with somebody else in a way that really reflects the true inner self. When you have miscommunications and stuff, it's usually because you're not allowing yourself to be vulnerable and be in the moment with somebody else. And I mean, and I say miscommunications because I think a lot of times that's more what it is than a downright dishonest lie or something like that. It's kind of like your situation where it really was more of a miscommunication and you both weren't on the same page as to how you were feeling about the events. And just maybe being a little bit more vulnerable and sitting down together from the start would have avoided the whole situation.
Well, and for my girlfriend and I, it's just hard for us to do because, again, you know, I think it's human nature. You prefer the devil you know to the devil you don't.
And, absolutely.
And so to be vulnerable like that.
But that actually adds to intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about intimacy is something from vulnerability. You can't have intimacy without being vulnerable. And I think one of the things that I want to get to tonight for sure is that the biggest thing we want to emphasize is to be more childlike. I think if you go back and you're more childlike, so in that situation, if you kind of see yourselves as kids and you do what kids would do, which would be like, I'm not happy, and you say exactly what's going on, at first it's going to be very difficult, but eventually that truth feeling and that outward authenticness is just going to come out because you're going to guess what's going to happen. Instead of that judgment you think you're going to get, you're going to get the opposite. And all of a sudden, because I remember when I went through it and I was like, oh God, I'm going to get judged. And so I would sit there and be like, I would say something like you, like I would laugh it off, LOL or whatever. Like, okay, you do what you want to do. I mean, you know, you're big, you know, whatever, you know, go get hit by a bus tomorrow, you know? And then I was like, what am I saying? I was like, these words are kind of not good, you know? And then I started realizing, just be honest. And as I was honest, there were three people that didn't like me being authentic, but it was because they weren't authentic, because they couldn't handle it. I mean, it's like putting like a spotlight up to somebody. They're like, oh, and they normally just kind of go away. But for the rest of the people that care about you, they're going to jump to the call and be like, well, this is refreshing. This isn't bad. I mean, in war, not advocating. but war is a different
thing. You can't have somebody running around with their hair on fire. Oh my God.
You can't have that in a combat zone.
But combat is all a different story too.
That wouldn't be good. But at the same time though, whenever you come back from the combat zone, I mean, for a lot of us, that wall is just not coming down. It's just not going to happen. The whole vulnerability thing, that's just something that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, if you keep saying it's not going to happen, then sure, it's not going to happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, but the thing is, I mean, for example, with me, when I hang out, I go out alone.
Probably
like 98% of the time, whenever, I go out to a bar or whatever, I don't call anybody. Hey, you want to go hang out? I just go and I'll just go by myself. I leave by myself, because it's like, I'm like, who really wants to deal with what's going on in my head? And like a lot of times, I'll go out and I'll meet other veterans. The thing is, we cling to one another in a way whenever we're out. But the thing is, we'll all leave separately. And the thing is, I don't know a single veteran that hangs out with a lot of people.
And, Ashley's looking at you like, alone? What's that?
Come on. I've been in a retreat. I've been in a meditational retreat for over 10 days where you can't speak to anybody. I don't know any of y'all that have done it, okay? So, no, I mean, alone, I've been alone. But I'm never really alone, though, really. We never really are alone, But you're right. I mean, I get what you're saying, Bill. And I get what you're saying, Keenan and Chris. The whole concept is about, trying to actually change these scripts. And maybe some of the work you might want to do is to really just kind of see what's inside. I mean, those thoughts aren't bad to recognize. And some of the thoughts that we have that might be negative in nature or might hold us back. Kind of just see it as like you're shooting skeet. You know, recognize it, see the words for what it is, and shoot it out. Get rid of it because it's not necessary. It's better to have a blank slate than to have a bunch of stuff holding you back. So stay tuned next week. We've got a great show for you. More stuff on the horizon on how to make your life better, as well as how to just realize that you are already happy. So Perspectives with your host, Ashley Burgess, will be back in, well, this time we'll be back in three shakes.